When I was a little kid, my parents taught me a powerful truth. Your parents might have taught you the same truth. Let's see if you've got it with me. It says, sticks and stones can break my bones, but words will never. Have you heard that? You know, my parents, loving, godly people, taught that to me. And it was the biggest crock of a lie that has ever been delivered anywhere at any time. I'm not trying to say to you that my parents were evil, but those words are just completely not true. Would anybody agree with that? My parents were wrong. The greatest damage that has come to me in my life has not been through sticks and stones. The greatest damage has been through words. I've had broken bones, and honestly, those broken bones have healed, and all these years later, I can hardly even remember how some of them happened. But I can clearly remember a bunch of the vicious things that were said to me 40, even 50 years ago. And those words that pierced my heart back then still sting today. Do you know what I'm talking about? My seventh grade teacher, we had just moved. We had moved in the middle of the school year. It was a traumatic time in my life. I needed some people to wrap their arms around me. Instead, I had a seventh grade teacher who told me that I was crazy and needed a psychiatrist and never would amount to anything. The coach in high school, when I was trying out for the baseball team, when I was a freshman in high school, I was 4'11". I was 4'11". I was trying out for the freshman sophomore team. The coach told me I was just way too small and I was never going to amount to any kind of an athlete. I had to just give it up and I had to go home. The teacher who told me I wasn't smart enough told me I didn't belong in her class and kicked me out. The words stuck in my head. And despite what my parents said, they sting. Even till today. Do you remember Karen Carpenter? She was the smooth, full-voiced alto who was part of the brother-sister singing sensation, the Carpenters, back in the 70s. We also remember that she died tragically in 1983. She was 32 years of age. But did you know that her death was self-inflicted? She died of anorexia nervosa. She basically starved herself to death. So what brought on the fatal obsession? Well, a reporter, a newspaper reporter, once called her Richard's chubby little sister. And that's all it took. I mean, look at her. Look at her. Does she look like a chubby little sister to you? But she could look in the mirror and see nothing but what the reporter had said. And so she began a process of starving herself to death. I'm just telling you, friends, it all speaks to the power of our words. As a youth minister, I was in constant contact with students who were trying to get their lives straightened out in light of things that had been said to them. Things that had been said to them by parents or pastors or teachers or coaches. Some of those kids honestly haunt me today. I'll never forget Dennis. He's one of the problem kids in our youth group, which was really sad. See, he came from a church family, a family that seemed to have so much going for them. His dad was an elder. His mom was a women's leader. Everything about the family from an outward perspective looked so positive, except for this kid. And the question was, what is wrong with you? He was a mess in our youth group, continually creating havoc. He was flunking out of most of his classes at school, in spite of the fact that when you had any kind of conversation with him, you could tell that he was reasonably intelligent. He was a senior, but his graduation was seriously in doubt, and he was always acting out everywhere he went, disrespectful, breaking the rules. So why did he act like that? Well, I learned that his parents had told him all of his life, from the time he was a little kid, that he was worthless. Told him that he was a mess. Told him that he would never amount to anything. Wondered why he just didn't do the noble thing and quit high school and go get a trade, move out, get out from under our hair, leave us alone, just go do nothing. Nobody, not his parents, not his counselors, not his teachers. Nobody gave the kid any encouragement. And so he gave up. And that's when I ran into him. And I began to ask him, you know, I've seen this troubled kid. The question is, you know, what's up? What's wrong? You know, what are your goals? What are your aspirations? What do you think about? What are you dreaming about? And his response was, it doesn't matter. It just doesn't matter. I mean, he had a chip on his shoulders 80 miles long. And when you asked him, he'd say, look, when you're stupid, when you're incapable, what does it matter? I mean, where does a 16, 17, 18-year-old kid learn this stuff? But after some prodding into his life, it finally came out what he wanted to do. He told me, I really want to be in the Air Force. I really want to fly fighter jets. So I said, well, let's go down and talk to a recruiter. Nobody had ever done this with him. Nobody had ever taken 3 minutes to say, let's go. So we went. He had a conversation. They ended up testing him. The test came back. He flew off the charts. He had all the abilities. His IQ was way above average. He had a passion for planes. Everything looked good. But in order to be accepted, he had to turn in his grades. And when they saw that, his grade point average wouldn't allow them to accept him into the flight school. Well, the Air Force would take him, but not as a pilot. He was a self-fulfilling prophecy. Of all the things that he had heard from the time he was old enough to understand, and he just caved in, and he lived out what everybody said about him. And the last thing I knew about this young man, he's pumping gas. Not that that's wrong. It's just that his abilities and aspirations were so much more, and he caved. Listen, friends, you need to get this, and I want you to write it down. Your words are powerful. Words are powerful. Would you say that with me? Words are powerful. Come on, say it again. Words are powerful. Proverbs chapter 12, verse 18 says, reckless words pierce like a sword, but the tongue of the wise will bring healing. Proverbs 15:4 says, the tongue that brings healing is a tree of life, but the deceitful tongue will crush the spirit. James agreed. James chapter 3, verse 5, he said, likewise, the tongue, it's a small part of the body, but it makes great boasts. Consider what a great forest is set on fire by a small spark. The tongue is also a fire, a world of evil among the parts of the body. It corrupts the whole person, sets the whole course of his life on fire, and is itself set on fire by hell. All kinds of animals, birds, reptiles, creatures of the sea are being tamed and have been tamed by man, but no man can tame the tongue. It's a restless evil full of deadly poison. Words are powerful. Would you say that with me again? Words are powerful. Our words can either help somebody or completely hinder them. Our words can build somebody up or tear them down and destroy them. Our words can give life or they can bring death. I'm telling you, friends, you have the power to alter the course of people's lives by the things that you say. The quickest way to bring destruction to another person is not by breaking a bone. The quickest way to destruction is through your mouth. And that's particularly true for those that you're closest to. Words have a huge effect on the people that we are closest to. It's easy to hurt the people that we love the most. What it means is that we just need to guard our words. Just like we guard our hearts, as we talked about last week. We need to be very careful with our tongues, with the things that we say. Cultivating a godly lifestyle demands that we get our mouths into check. So just like Solomon encouraged us to guard our hearts, we need to know that our mouths are the next thing on the hit list. With as much power as our words have, we need to guard every word that comes out of our mouths. It's what Jesus would do. He would make sure that every word, every syllable was important and it meant something and it was said in the right spirit. Otherwise, he'd just keep it back. Jesus carefully guarded his speech. And if we are going to be like him, which is the goal of the Christian walk, then it means that we need to do the exact same thing, which raises an important question. How do you go about guarding your words? How do you go about guarding your mouth? I've got three thoughts here that are written down. Really, they're coming right at us from the book of Proverbs. I want to encourage you to think with me and to put these things into your mind. The first one, guarding your mouth begins with a realization. And here it is. Ready? My words are a barometer of my heart. We need to understand that the way we talk is an issue of our hearts. Our speech will be directed by what is down inside of us. Now, the Bible makes this point from beginning to end. Solomon makes it right here. He says, chapter 4, verse 23, above all else, guard your heart, for it is the wellspring of life. Your heart is the core of your being. And what Solomon says, it is the spring through which so much of your life transpires. So to get my life into track and on road with God, I have got to make sure that my heart is in a right condition. And then I've got to be checking other things in my life because the other things in my life will be a barometer to tell me how my heart is really doing. If you have a problem with your mouth, what you really have is a problem with your heart. And Jesus said the exact same thing, Matthew 12:34, for out of the overflow of the heart, the mouth speaks. Jesus said in Matthew 15, I love this. Are you so dull? Are you, hello, McFly, are you dull? Don't you see that whatever enters the mouth goes into the stomach and then out of the body, but the things that come out of the mouth come from the heart. And these make a man unclean, for out of the heart come evil thoughts, murder, adultery, sexual immorality, theft, false testimony, slander. It begins here. It moves here. And James agreed with both Solomon and Jesus. James said in chapter 3, can both fresh water and salt water flow from the same spring? My brothers, can a fig tree bear olives or a grapevine bear figs? It's a rhetorical question. The answer is no. No, Jesus says, neither can a salt spring produce fresh water. Who you are deep down in your heart will dictate the things that come out of your mouth. And that's why we have to guard our hearts. If you're having trouble speaking in pleasant, loving, caring, kind ways, what it is really demonstrating is that you have a significant problem elsewhere. So listen to yourself, friends, and take note. You can't put rot into your mind, into your heart. You can't take it in and put it down in here and not think that it is not going to come out. What goes in is what comes out. If you want to clean up your mouth, it begins with cleaning up your heart. It begins with making sure that you are guarding your heart and only the right things are going into your heart. And that demands that we are carefully, carefully, carefully guarding them, protecting what we put in, realizing that this is a barometer of this. And it leads to a second point. Sometimes, the best thing we can do with our speech is to slow down. Wisely weigh your words. See, for a lot of us, what we do is we react. It comes at us, it's coming right out of us. It's just like zing bang. And so we're just responding, we're reacting. And maybe the best thing we can do is stop, slow down, bite our tongue, weigh our words before they ever come out. This last week, I had a conversation with a guy that I went to high school with. Just out of the blue, he called and wanted to talk, and he's in a church, he's in California, and we were talking about some things. Anyway, the bottom line is I was working on this message, and I was remembering back to our junior high days. We were both in high school band. We were both in the junior high band together, and we had a guy as our band director in junior high. His name was Mr. Gooch, G-O-O-C-H, Gooch. What a great name for a junior high band director, don't you think? Mr. Gooch. Actually, he could have been called Mr. Grinch because he was just this sour, sour, kind of nasty, angry guy all the time. He's a little bit older. And most days, he just didn't like his job very much. I mean, you'd have to be around him to figure this out. I mean, it just came. From a distance, it came out of him. I think he was a frustrated musician. I think he was like a lot of young guys that had these dreams and aspirations and they never came out. You know, he had dreams of playing in a symphony orchestra someplace, making beautiful music in front of large crowds where people would pay lots of money to come hear this people play and then applaud with appreciation. And instead, he was the band director for a bunch of 13 and 14-year-olds, the kind of job you would like, right? And the sounds that came out of the band room were not always symphonic. Lots of times the sound that was coming out of the band room was a lot more like a cacophony. I mean, just noise. And I'm just telling you, when I was in band as a 13 and 14-year-old, 7th and 8th grade, I sat in some of that, I mean, it made my toenails curl. I can only imagine what it did to this guy. As I look back, I think I know what it did to him. And I think I know because of his actions and his response all the time. He was constantly berating the band, yelling at the band, screaming. I mean, he was screaming at the drummers, the percussion guys in the back. He didn't call them drummers. He called them dummers, D-U-M-B, dumb. Dummers. You're a bunch of dummers. He'd throw his baton. I mean, all of us were like hiding behind our music stands because any chance that he got, that thing just was like a guided missile. It's like, boom, flying across the room. If you did, I mean, no wonder we couldn't see him. We were scared to death to look at him. You got might get your eyeballs pierced. And all the time we'd be playing, he'd be screaming, no, 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 no. He'd put his palms on his temples. He'd drop his baton. And then he'd just start rubbing his temples and he'd say, oh God, oh God, oh God, oh God. I really thought he was on the verge of stroking out. He was in pain, obvious pain. He'd gone from being a music performance major in college to the band director of this junior high group, never where he saw himself winding up, and he was miserable. And his miserable heart came out. I think it's probably why he said these words to us over and over and over. In fact, as I was talking to my friend Brent on the phone this last week, I said, do you remember what he used to say, think? He said, yeah, think before you stink and know before you blow. Before you blow, know. Before you stink, think. No. He would take his baton. He'd, you know, as a conductor, he'd bring it up, and all the instruments would come to our lips as we get ready to play. And he, you know, before he'd give the downbeat, he'd just stop and he'd say, please, think before you stink. No, before you blow. I'm just telling you, it was a miserable 2 years in Mr. Gooch's junior high band. But there's a lot we could learn from him. Think before you stink. Make sure of what you're going to say before you say it. Know before you blow your mouth off. Know that the words you're about to say have the ability to create some really good things or create some really bad things, to bring life, to bring death. Don't just blow off. Carefully choose your words, knowing they are powerful. Words are powerful. Would you say that with me again? Words are powerful. Come on, say it again. Words are powerful. Solomon would have agreed. He said in Proverbs 15:28, the heart of the righteous weighs its answers, but the mouth of the wicked gushes evil. Proverbs 17:28, even a fool is thought wise if he keeps silent and discerning if he holds his tongue. Proverbs 21:23, he who guards his mouth and his tongue keeps himself from calamity. Proverbs 29:20, do you see a man who speaks in haste? There's more hope for a fool than for him. Now, I'm sure you would agree, when we open our mouths and let the words gush out, when we don't take the time to stop and think about what we're saying, when we just respond, we get ourselves into trouble. Speaking too quickly often leads to pain. Pain for the person listening, for the person receiving it, and oftentimes pain for the person who's giving it. It's happened to me more than once over the years where I've been on the receiving end of some of that stuff, and it can just take you down. But I'm telling you, it in those moments when I have just responded and where I've just given something, where it just come out as like, and I get away from that, and there's that thing in my stomach that's just like pitted up, and it's painful, and it hurts. Someone says something without even thinking, I just blurt my response. Sometimes before I can even think about it, the words are already out across my lips. What's the old adage? Open mouth, insert foot. Have you ever done it? More than once, I've had to go back and apologize for the things I've said. More than once, I've done damage to another person because I just had to say something, and I had to say it right now. When you guard your mouth and tongue, you will keep yourself from calamity. Before a wise man speaks, he weighs his words. It's not just Proverbs that lifts up this word of encouragement. The Bible is full of these same words of encouragement to guard our speech. Ephesians 4:29, do not let any unwholesome talk come out of your mouth, but only what is helpful for building others up according to their needs, that it may benefit those who listen. Or how about 1 Peter 3:10? For whoever would love life and see good days must keep his tongue from evil and his lips from deceitful speech. Or how about Philippians 4:8? Finally, brothers, whatever is true, whatever is noble, whatever is right, whatever is pure, whatever is lovely, whatever is admirable, if anything is excellent or praiseworthy, think about these things. Let your speech be surrounded by these things: pure, lovely, admirable, good, noble. And if that's to happen, then we need to slow down. We need to think before we speak. In fact, you would be wise to use the word think as an acrostic to help evaluate the words that you're going to say before you ever say them. I mean, I would encourage you, take these words, these letters, T-H-I-N-K, and write them down. T, Is it true? Is what I'm about to say true? Before you ever even say it, stop and say, is what I'm going to say true? Now, honestly, a lot of what we say borders on whether it's really completely 100% accurate or not. Before you speak, make sure that the only thing you're ever going to say is something that is completely true. And then after we determine if it's true, then take the letter H. Is it helpful? Is what I'm about to say is true, but is it going to be helpful to the person who hears it? Will it be good for those around to hear what I'm about ready to say? Will it lift them up? And then I, is it inspiring? Will it be something that will lead them to a better place? And then N, is it necessary? Is it even something that needs to be said? The Bible warns us against idle words, just talking to fill up space. We shouldn't speak any vain words. We shouldn't be wasting ourselves in idle conversation. That stuff's just going to lead to no place good. And that, in fact, idle words may be the point where we get ourselves into more trouble than anything else, kind of where all of that gossip and that kind of stuff starts to make its way out. It's because it's idle. Guard against idle words. Is it necessary? And then K, is it kind? Is it kind? No unwholesome words out of your mouth. My mom used to say, if you can't say something nice, then don't say anything at all. And I'd go to respond, and she'd say, just button it, pal. Get to your room. Nobody wants to hear it. Paul tells us in 1 Thessalonians 5 that we should encourage one another. We don't accomplish encouragement by ripping each other down. Be sure that the things you're going to say are kind. Solomon said that fools gush evil. And for that reason, we need to slow down and think. Think about what we're going to say before we ever say it. Let's make sure that that the things that we say are worth saying. It means we need to think before we speak. So our words are a barometer of our heart. They're revelatory of what's going on down here. And if we're going to have the kind of speech patterns that are going to be helpful, then we need to slow down. And let me give you one more last word of encouragement about our words. And that's this. Timing. It's not the number of words. It's a word that is spoken in the right moment that really can make an impact. I read a story this past week about a pastor in a tiny little community up in way north Wyoming. It was a Sunday before Christmas a couple of years ago, and a severe snowstorm hit the area, had dumped several feet of snow. The pastor was at the church, you know, kind of sweeping the walks and trying to get things ready, but even then he knew nobody was coming to church on this morning. But, you know, just in case, the pastor's getting everything ready, so he continued. He got everything out, everything together. And a few minutes before church was started, nobody was there. And then all of a sudden, walking through the door, kind of shaking himself off, was a cowboy. He had never seen this guy before. But he invited him in anyway, and the guy came in. He handed him a bulletin. The guy came in. He sat down on the back pew. The minister, you know, went to the guy and said, "Hey, I with the snow out, I don't know what we're expecting, but, you know, let's give it a few more minutes." 20 minutes later, the pastor came to the guy and said, "I don't think anybody else is going to show up. So what do you think? Do you think we ought to do this?" The stranger, the cowboy, responded. He said, "Pastor, I've been a cowboy in this part of the country all my life. And all winter, I feed 500 head of cattle every day, come rain, come shine, come sleet, come snow. Whether one comes or whether all 500 come, I feed them every day." With that, the pastor was emboldened. He went up. So he went up, started the service. They sang a couple songs. Mostly the pastor sang, the cowboy listened. And then when that was all done, he had the crowd sit down, and then he wound into his sermon. And as he launched into his sermon, he preached for an hour and a half. 90 minutes. And the cowboy sat in the back all the way through it. And when it was all said and done, the pastor standing at the door to greet his congregation of one as he's going out, pastor said, what did you think? Did you enjoy the service? And the cowboy said, "You know, like I said before, pastor, I've been feeding 500 cows every day all my life. Come rain, come shine, come sleet, come snow. Whether one comes, whether all 500 come, I feed them every day. But if only one cow comes, I don't dump the whole feed trough on them." Sometimes the greatest things said are uttered in just a few syllables. The Lord's Prayer. It's 56 words. That's it. The Declaration of Independence. 300 words. The Ten Commandments. 297 words. The Gettysburg Address. 266 words. A recent U.S. government order setting the price of cabbage is 26,911 words long. It's 100 pages long. Any of you read it? That's what I thought. Sometimes it's not a lot of words. Sometimes it's a timely word. The point is really simple, and I want you to write this down. The right word, spoken at the right time, will bring about a powerful result. When you're a person who's listening and your heart is right, and you're contemplating how to really lift somebody up and how to really encourage them, sometimes it just makes you stop and listen. And then at the right moment, that right word, that right sentence, that right phrase can make all the difference. Solomon put his 2 cents worth in. He said in 15:23, "A man finds joy in giving an apt reply, and how good is a timely word." And notice this word is singular. It doesn't say how good is a timely word, period. Proverbs 25:11 says, a word aptly spoken is like apples of gold and settings of silver. When I was 16 years of age, I was heavily contemplating what I was going to do with my life. My youth pastor at my church had been encouraging me and directing me, pointing me to ministry. He said, Derek, I really think that you have the gifts and the abilities and the talents to do this. I think you really seriously ought to consider ministry. And frankly, it's really what I wanted to do, but I had a problem. My dad. My dad was an executive, a business executive in a huge corporation. And I was sure that my dad wanted me to follow in his footsteps. He was highly successful. He wanted me to do the same thing. Make a nice living, drive a nice car, marry a nice gal, have a nice house. I really wanted to tell him that I was considering not following in his footsteps, that I was considering going into ministry, but I was sure that he would be completely and totally 100% disappointed and not supportive of my decision. So for 2 years, through my sophomore and junior and into my senior years, I kept it to myself. And as the clock was ticking and I was moving further to closer to graduation, my dad started bothering me all the more. What are you going to do? Where are you going to go to school? Where are you going to apply for school? And I would just shrug my shoulders. It was not totally honest, but I was afraid of what would come as in a response to what I was going to say. Finally, the time came when I just couldn't keep it quiet any longer. See, to get into college, you got to take what's called the SAT, right? I had taken the pre-SAT. In fact, I had done really well on it, but it was time to take the SAT, and I had just never taken it. And the reason is because I was getting ready to enroll at Ozark Bible College in Joplin, Missouri, and Joplin, Ozark, didn't require the SAT, so I didn't have to take it. So why would you go waste 4 hours of your time and all of that money and all of that study for something that's going to be worthless, right? So I just never took it, and now my dad's bugging me. When are you going to take it? 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 I mean, it turned into a daily thing. I had to tell him that I had applied to Bible college. My dad went to Stanford, like the Harvard of the West. He was an engineering major. He'd become a business leader. My dad was on the cutting edge of computers coming into vogue. And I had to tell him that I was going to Bible college. I was going to major in preaching and Bible. I was going to enter into full-time ministry, and I was sure that I was going to crush his spirit. I knew he would be solely disappointed with my decision, but I had to tell him it couldn't go any further. So the next time he asked, when are you going to take the SAT? When are you going to take the SAT? I took a deep breath, and I said, Dad, I'm not going to take it. He said, what? You're not going to college? And I said, I am. I'm going to Ozark Bible College in Joplin, Missouri. I'm going to become a preacher. There was silence. Silence on the other end of the table as I uttered those words to my dad. That was the worst thing that could have happened. I mean, if he had gotten up and yelled and screamed and hit me, that would have been easier than the silence. But then the silence over the next couple of moments turned into my dad shedding a tear. I had never, except for one time in my growing up years, seen my dad shed a tear. And now my dad is literally weeping in front of me. I'm thinking, I'm toast. And then he looked up. And with tears coming down his cheeks, my dad said, Derek, I couldn't be more proud of the decision you've made. And if I had to do it all over again, I would do the exact same thing. It's 40 years later. And I can even hardly get the sentence out without emotion. Because words are powerful. Would you say that with me again? Words, powerful. Those 25 words changed my life. And my dad became my biggest fan. We talked almost every day of my ministry years. The church, the issues, the problems, the next steps, the goals, the objectives. He became not only my biggest fan, he became my biggest supporter. As a business industry guy, he understood things I had never received in Bible college. He understood all the stuff about goals and objectives and HR and finance and organization and strategic planning. And there was an ongoing dialogue going on with my dad about the issues of ministry that I didn't know about. And he was leading me and guiding me and helping me and encouraging me and educating me. When it came out that our finance manager, the guy had been on our staff for 20 years in Phoenix. He had grown up at the church, and now he's in charge. He had been for 20 years in charge of all the finances. I started wondering if maybe he was stealing money, if he was embezzling funds. And the person I turned to ask the question was my dad. And my dad, I went to California and I brought all the books with us. And over the course of several days, we started going in and out and over the books. And my dad was the one who found it. My dad was the one who discerned it. My dad was the one that showed me how to see it and how to understand it. It was my dad who led us to the place of being able to confront this guy. Whenever I needed help, I turned to my dad. He spent thousands of hours over the years helping me understand practices that would help a church thrive. He couldn't have been more supportive of what I was doing. He died nearly 8 years ago. There's a hole in my life and a hole in my heart because of what I don't get to do every day, and that's call my dad. A word that is spoken at just the right moment can alter a life. I know, because I'm a product of that. So choose your words carefully. Understand that they are a barometer of your heart. Before you allow them out, slow down, stop, and think about what you're getting ready to stink up with. And choose the moment very carefully when you're going to deliver those words. You know it's true. And sadly, we can all be guilty of violating the truth. But friends, what I want to encourage you today is join in with me to say, never again. I will be a person who checks my heart, understanding that it is the wellspring of my life. And I will be a person who understands that the words that come here are a barometer of what's really here, and I will allow this to influence how I think about this. And I will understand that my words can bring life or death or health or devastation or build up or destroy, which means I will take great care in what I say. And friends, let me add one more important thought to this conversation. And it's not in your notes, but I want to make sure you hear it. And for that, I'm going to put it on the screen, and I want you to write it down. And that's this. Your horizontal relationships with others is a picture of the health of your vertical relationship with God. Your horizontal relationship with others is a picture of the health of your vertical relationship with God. Let me just tell you what I mean. There's all kinds of people that say, I've got all kinds of problems out here with everybody around me, but me and God, we're okay. And I'm just going to tell you, that's bunk. This cannot be okay if this is not okay. If this is not okay, this is out of line. Do you hear what I'm saying? The way that we talk and treat each other is held in direct correlation by our God, by our Father, and how we treat Him. That's why in Matthew chapter 25, as Jesus is talking about the parable of the sheep and the goats, you remember the story, God on judgment day is separating everybody, and He's saying to this group over here, come over here, you're a sheep. And they're saying, how do we get over here? And He said, when I was naked, you clothed me. When I was in prison, you visited me. When I was hungry, you fed me. And they're going to say, when do we do that to you? And he says, when you did it to the least of these, you did it to me. It's the same conversation for those that are goats. He said, you're over here. Why are we over here? Because when I was naked, you didn't clothe me. When I was hungry, you didn't feed me. When did we not do that? When you didn't do it here, you didn't do it here. Should it be any surprise to any of us then that Jesus says in Matthew chapter 5 in the Sermon on the Mount, he says, therefore, let's go to the next slide. Therefore, if you're offering your gift at the altar, if you're in church and you're offering your gift and you remember that your brother has something against you, leave your gift there in front of the altar. First go and be reconciled to your brother, then come and offer your gift. Because if this is out of whack, this is out of whack. Listen, friends, we've got to take this seriously. Our horizontal relationships are a statement of our vertical relationships. And if we are out here, we are out here. And our words have much to say about this. So what are we going to do? Here's my encouragement. Let's be careful about cultivating our mouths to only be saying things that will bring honor and glory to the one who created us. And let's refuse to ever again be those kind of people who are going to allow our mouths to damage and to hurt and to cause pain with one other person. Speak the truth, yes, speak the truth, but always, always, always do it in love, carefully, carefully, carefully. Guard your words. Let me encourage you. Bow your heads. Would you do that? And let me just say, friends, healthy people have healthy mouths. So if God was standing in front of you, even now, and he was giving an evaluation of your speech patterns, what would he say to you? What would be the word of encouragement he would bring to you? What would he say to you needs to change? What relationship needs to be restored by you taking the initiative and repenting and seeking forgiveness? Lord, for every one of us, there are probably people that we need to take a step with. And I pray, Father, that you'll help us to be people that are not so quick to throw stones, but are willing to look in a mirror and see their own souls. So, Father, help us today to check our hearts and check our mouths and make determinations that we are going to be more of what you want us to be, deeper in relationship with you. And we lift it up in the name of the one who makes it possible, Jesus. And God's people said,